We are facing a devastating credit freeze and the possibility of a catastrophic economic collapse. The problems that started with the excesses and anything goes attitude on Wall Street are unfortunately today not contained to Wall Street. The news from Colorado over the last few days has been grim. Small businesses are worrying that their credit will dry up and they won't be able to make payroll. Workers are seeing their pensions and retirement savings hanging in the balance. Young families are worrying that they won't be able to borrow money for their first home. Students going back to school fear their bank won't extend their college loans. Farmers and ranchers across the state worry that interest rates will skyrocket, making it difficult for them to buy seed, fuel, and fertilizer, and to be able to continue the operating lines that are necessary for their farms and their ranches. And construction projects in Colorado are grinding quickly to a halt. All of this is happening because borrowing money is getting simply too expensive or is not available. The economic pain inflicted by the Wall Street credit crunch is not new to the middle-class families in Colorado and across the nation. In my view, middle-class families have been hurt by the failed economic policies of the last 8 years. The crisis on Wall Street is the final verdict on those failed policies. I believe that Congress should take action, but we need to get this right. I have been working with my colleagues in the last few days to uphold several principles I articulated last week. The bill that we are considering this afternoon and into this evening and will be voting on later on will do a number of things that, for me, are important. First, it will protect the taxpayer. I said from the beginning that there should be no blank check. The Bush administration and Secretary Paulson had asked for a $700 billion blank check. Instead, what this legislation will propose to do is to have the amount of money made available in installments. The first installment will be $250 billion. The president will have to certify that he needs another $100 billion, and then it'll take congressional action for the remaining half. So we have more than half the request of the administration. Secondly, there is vigorous independent oversight, including a special inspector general and a bipartisan board that will oversee the program. And thirdly, there is strict reporting requirements of the program, where reports will be required to be submitted back to Congress every month. In addition, what the proposed legislation will do is it will help homeowners weather the storm. It requires the government to try and to work out the mortgages it purchases and controls. That way, people will not lose their homes. Secondly, it requires an expansion of the Hope for Homeowners program, which allows workouts of FHA-insured mortgages with families who are in their homes. In addition, the legislation imposes strict limitations on executive compensation. It removes tax subsidies for deferred compensation, and imposes tax cuts on golden parachutes. The fat cats who have created the problem that we're seeing today in the financial industry should not be rewarded. And finally, what the legislation does is it provides oversight to strengthen the financial markets. It creates an opportunity for us to move forward with hearings and to come back so that we can restructure the financial regulatory system of the United States so that it works for the 21st century realities that we are facing. I want to add another point in terms of what we have been doing on this legislation since the House voted down the initial proposal on Monday. There have been several important changes to the bill. The first of those has been the additional FDIC insurance, which will be required, moving the amount from $100,000 to $250,000. That should provide peace of mind to depositors, and many of them are small businesses, that they will not lose their money because the federal government will be in a position where their money will be insured. Second of all, there is major middle-class tax cut that is included in the legislation in the package that we included. It includes the deductions that taxpayers now make for college tuition and for teachers' out-of-pocket expenses for real property deductions on homes and a whole host of other tax credits that benefit the middle class. It also extends the alternative minimum tax relief for 23 million middle-class taxpayers in the United States, and also ushers in the research and development tax credit, which will not expire as a result of this legislation. And thirdly, the legislation, very importantly for us in Colorado, also includes the renewable energy extensions that are so important for jobs and for the renewable energy frontier that we're creating in the state of Colorado. We have moved forward in the last several years to create more than 1,000 companies that are now creating jobs in the renewable energy industry. We have seen many parts of our state begin to flower because of the renewable energy world. The tax incentives that we create in this program are for several years ahead, including an 8-year tax credit for solar energy, which I think has a huge potential for the state of Colorado. So this legislation is significantly improved from the legislation that was voted down by the House of Representatives on Monday. I will continue to speak to my colleagues and to further study the legislation as we get closer to a vote, which ought to be taking place here sometime this evening.